Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. I don't know what episode it is. It is the weekend beat. On this episode, we replaced a little bit of our critiques and criticisms, whether that's a movie or a book, and pop culture, and have done a part two on the Rust Belt. So I'm here and happy to introduce a good friend of mine, Zach Colamonte, and we talk a little bit about our upbringing in the Rust Belt and some, ideology, politics, and just regular old bullshitting. So I'm not going to introduce. We do it in the podcast, but thanks for tuning in.
How's it?
We're talking about Rust Belt, but we got a little bit of
Midwest Hawaiian. I just got back from Hawaii, so.
How was Big Island?
It was good. Yeah, we didn't get too much chatting about that. It was even better than the last time I went. I was able to go with my wife, so shout out to Jenny. She may not listen to this, but I might force her to.
Oh, that's good. So when I first started this podcast and Sarah was on the other side of the country, she was like, I listen to the podcast because I get to hear your voice. And it's just so nice. And now she's like, I don't listen to anything because I hear you talk so much all the time. Yeah. But a good forced podcast listen is always good it's always good for the soul, right?
We had a little lava action, some sea turtles, the whole nine, lots of driving in the Jeep.
Awesome. Well, just to give background here and some perspective, I met you in around 2013, I believe. We were both in and out of San Antonio, and then you were my sponsor when I got to Hawaii, and I think we just kicked it off because I think we aligned fairly close, I suppose, politically. Not that that should create friendships or anything, but definitely ideologically, and just had even disagreements were just great conversations of hours sitting out on the lanai in Hawaii.
Ah, yes, and more
just,
Hawaii.
Yeah, just talking philosophy and music and. And then we also shared that, it's not really a commonality, but definitely rivals when it comes to football teams.
Yeah.
You were an Ohio State guy or are a Hawaii.
I mean, I'm an alumnus. An alumnus.
And I'm a UMich guy, area of University of Michigan. So we didn't clash too much when it came to the Big Ten, maybe because I just didn't care about football.
No, but it was always Big Ten against everyone else. So there you go.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think the goal here is to chat a little bit. I think our upbringing was fairly similar. And then you're also stationed now in Pittsburgh. So there's a dual perspective of cities. And, we'll give you the floor here to just talk. I interviewed my dad, and I don't know where this will fit in when I edit this down. But I did get a perspective of growing up in a Rust Belt city, Detroit, and then moving through sort of the decline of Detroit. And I don't know how Cleveland is specifically or how it was, but I do know Detroit, that 8 mile perspective was there's Detroit, and we don't really go to Detroit. There's no purpose unless you're going for, at the time the football team wasn't even down there, but you go for hockey. That was pretty much it. Or if you wanted to go across the border to Windsor and party in Canada.
Yeah. But I was going to say, growing up, I mean, I didn't think Detroit was that bad, but it also, it was making its moves, good and bad, at that time. I remember going to a Tigers game to the old stadium.
The old stadium, yep.
Yeah. And then, I did the Windsor trip, obviously, after you're 18, it's always a good idea to make the Windsor trip because things are legal in Canada that aren't legal in the U.S.
Man, I shan't describe the debauchery that happened in Windsor. And it was Windsor, in Port Huron area, Sarnia.
But yeah, I mean, the first thing you see when you come back from Canada, if you're driving across that bridge and from Windsor to Detroit, is like a broke down building. I mean, it was a 20 story old either apartment or warehouse building that's just fallen apart. And, I made jokes on it at the time, but Cleveland's shoreline was, there's that goofy Cleveland tourism video talking about it being a Scooby-Doo ghost town in certain spots. And I remember growing up in that shoreline, you could see straight through the buildings. I mean, glass straight to the other side, you can see the sun setting through it. And it's not because it's, you know, an open concept. It's because there's nothing in there.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't the postmodern industrial
loft Chip look. And Joanna weren't cleaning it out.
No, it's right. It was weird to see, and Detroit's come a long way in the sense that, you know, they opened up gambling in the city. So the casinos really became, and that was almost the, I don't want to say demise of Windsor, because Windsor's, it's obviously a different country, but it was interesting to go from one place to another and have such a difference in just culture. And you'd go right across the bridge or under the tunnel, and you're in this new world. I mean, literally it's vibrant, it's happening. And then you come across and it's just a ghost town, and it is making strides. And I think with, Detroit's its own podcast in itself, and I'm sure Cleveland could be, but it literally is just a massive city. I mean, it's Boston, San Francisco, and like one other city, and it's, if you were to put those together, Detroit's still bigger. So municipalities and police departments, I mean, it's just almost impossible to, with the budget that it had, to even give good service. And that just plays into, you know, infrastructure and whatnot. But so when you lived in Cleveland growing up, did you live in Cleveland or did you live more of the suburb kind of?
So that's always the funniest thing anytime you talk to someone, where are you from? And I always say west of Cleveland, because I don't want to be that guy that says I was from Cleveland. But, you know, when I was born, my parents lived in, you know, pretty much Cleveland proper. It's called Slavic Village, and it's now, you know, one of those type of neighborhoods where you can see people moving out, and, you know, it's just the whole dynamic changes over time when you're talking about those areas right around a big city. So I was born, and my parents moved to a suburb called Lakewood, which is it's directly next to Cleveland proper. And that's where I grew up, went to elementary school and all that. So I lived, and it's all gridded streets, you know, north, south, east, west type streets, about six or eight different elementary schools down to three or four middle schools. And then, you know, one gigantic high school where the graduating classes are thousands of people. And, you know, that was the original upbringing. And then I moved out a little further west outside of Cleveland to a suburb called North Ridgeville. That, you know, was a farm town that turned into a suburbia type town, but never really, it still doesn't have a true like identity of its own. It's just, you know, one of those turnpike towns, you know, sure, along the way. But it's one of the largest land area towns in Ohio, period, because of the farming, and it was a breadbasket type city. So I've had a little bit of experience in a couple different things, and you know, we can talk on multitude of things, but, you know, also seeing that similarity to Detroit in a lakeside city. We are a little different in that Northern Ohio area, that we didn't have Canada right across the way, but you can see a lot of the same things happening where sports turn into a big thing because there's really not much else to go after that whole Rust Belt. The steel, LTV steel, was the large industry there in Cleveland. And once that started decreasing, you saw other things kind of happening. You saw a lot of the economy dropping, and now same as Detroit, going through that Renaissance revival. Dan Gilbert, same guy that did a lot in Detroit. Bruce Wayne is taking over Gotham and Cleveland again.
So when you grew up in your neighborhoods, was there a specific industry that you could almost point to, like up and down the street, Mr. Smith, Mr. Jones, I'm thinking all American names here, but all really, like, there was one industry that most people were tied to or did work that supplied to a specific industry?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, and it might sound too similar to your dad's, obviously I haven't heard your conversation with him, but the automotive industry, I mean, between mechanic shops and those kind of things, that's, you know, the day to day, what you see around the neighborhood. But I remember a guy up the street, he used to work for Chevy, and that's all they had in their driveways was Chevys. You know, it was a family of seven, and they had a Suburban, and they all squeezed into it. And my grandpa was a Ford, you know, a retired Ford stamping plant, the aluminum stamping plant. And he you know, my wife, her dad, my father-in-law has a T-Bird, a 57 T-Bird that my grandpa stamped the trunk on.
Wow.
You know, he knows that he stamped the trunk on it because he stamped all the trunks for the 57 T-Bird out of his plant. So I know the automotive industry was just a large part of it. And not that everybody worked for one of those, but, you know, there's still Chevy and Ford plants in the area that do different things. There's different lines east of where I grew up that do different parts of the engines. And you have, I mean, my truck that I have is a Dearborn truck. Mm-hmm. You know, it came from that area. So, you know, you see that and you kind of, it does kind of make it resonate a little bit, and you think about it and realize that if I had to say any industry, it was definitely some kind of automotive, because all the steel was going towards the cars too.
Exactly. You
know, maybe not all of it, but a good chunk of it.
So I think when, as I've been exploring sort of the political, but geographical regions, what I find is that a lot of these cities almost put all of their, when you think of investment, they put all of their eggs in one basket. And that happened. And I don't think that was purposeful. I just think it's what worked best. And, and the whole economy's really flourished off of, I mean, in Detroit, it was during World War II. It was, and I'm sure Cleveland was the same exact way, converting those plants to support the war. And then you have everyone come home. You don't really.
Alcoa was an aluminum plant. There was a big one. I remember driving past all the time. And the only reason why I remember is because there was a Mr. Hero right in front of it. And I don't know if people that are listening don't know what Mr. Hero is. It's really just garbage kind of fast food. But I always remember driving past that and asking my dad, what is that? And he said it was an aluminum plant, but it was, they stamped the aluminum for one of the planes during World War II. You know, so there's that tie there.
Yeah, it's for sure. and then they were able to come home, and then my dad had referenced this. You know, they built row houses or small cookie cutter houses, and everything was affordable, and you could go and get a good job working in the automotive industry post World War II, and really build your family based on, you know, like your grandfather stamping, putting the stamp on trunks of T-Birds, or you know, my biological grandfather, who passed, I never knew him, but he was a commercial electrician in the trades, and everything was revolved around this one thing, was steel and automotive. Mm-hmm. And it obviously growing up, you know, you still had, I think that there was a push to get a college degree, and over time that just sort of shifted that way, especially when jobs get outsourced. And there isn't anything else to really do except for, you know, either work on the line or go and get a job to help manage that. But it was around 2008, and I don't know if Cleveland was the same way, but when 2000s hit, when they really outsourced a lot of jobs, it felt like when 2008 hit, that Detroit or that area had already been feeling the effects of globalization before 2008 even hit. So it was more or less insult to injury, as opposed to, wow, we're live in New York City and you work on Wall Street and all of a sudden you're out of job or you're not making money anymore. And it was just this new way of life. And this is what we do now in digging yourself out of the recession, as opposed to Detroit, where it was like, yep, well, we saw this coming. You know, you didn't really have to, when we've already been preparing for this,
look at the people that were affected in that. Lower class was already, you know, the lower income folks were already not making much money. They were already in the bottom of the barrel. It was the middle class that were buying houses that they really couldn't afford, but thought they at least could try to, you know, have that American dream. And that was all those surrounding areas outside of the metropolis. You know, those houses were already bought, or, you know, apartments were rented or whatever. It was the spread, that urban sprawl. I mean, obviously the one that people remember, especially for something like The Big Short or whatever, is Florida, talking about all the people buying outside of their means in Florida. But it happened in all the suburbs. I mean, the neighborhood that we moved out of when my parents divorced, we sold our house. And my mom sold it in 2007.
Wow.
Like right before. Oh. And she did not a for sale by owner, but it was one of those kind of things where you just have like a light realtor helping you. And we sold it. And I think a year and a half later or whatever, the people that bought it had foreclosed on it.
Wow.
And they were, you know, they had a pizza business and something else. Like, they weren't like bottom of the barrel or anything, or bad people that made a dumb decision. It was just everything kind of fell apart.
It's interesting. It's this narrative that you see within the Rust Belt community, and I'm sure it transcends, you know, every geographical region in the United States. But it's this idea of middle class and what is middle class. And you hear that a lot from politicians, you know, we're going to help the middle class. The middle class is the most important. And it almost seems like we're redefining what that is. And right. The middle class for my dad and your dad growing up, your mom, I think your mom's a nurse. So there's a bit of, I don't want to say immunity, but there is a little bit of job, certainly a lot of job security in medical. But there, and you can chime in on this, but it's almost as if we're redefining what middle class is and what you get by being part of the middle class. And for my dad and your parents growing up, it was very much, look, you have one job, you're working towards a pension, and you should be able to do this one job with and be able to retire happy and support a family. And all of a sudden, our generation is redefining middle class as, hey, if we really want to be the middle to top of the middle class, it's going to require two incomes. It's going to require a college degree, at a minimum, a college mm-hmm. degree, if not an advanced degree or a master's degree or something like that. And I think, you know, we'd like, I don't know if going back in time is necessarily the right way to go maybe a lot of cultural reasons, but I think that idea, the dream of the middle class is redefined, or we are redefining it within our generation.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. That was the thought that was in my head while you were talking was, you know, maybe it's just the American dream is not the same, and that's okay. It's going to change over time. I mean, the American dream at one point was, you know, having a log cabin out in the woods and having your plot figured out exactly, you know, a dollar per or whatever. That was the American dream. It just wasn't articulated the same way. And then it turned into, you know, welcome to the future, you know, like that kitchen of the future.
Yeah.
Well, and having four kids and, you know, some, you know, usually, I mean, historically it was the man that was the breadwinner and the wife was there. I mean, you can picture it in black and white in your head.
That's right.
You know, like you can, and it's Brady Bunch meets whatever your favorite show was. And now it's a little bit different. I mean, we joke about the Dinks of the world, the dual income, no kids. Yeah. And I mean, Jenny and I, we just took a trip to Hawaii, and that's not to rub it in, but we don't have any children. We've decided that's what we want to do for now. That's not saying, I mean, we just got married last year. So, we want to take our time, and there's nothing wrong with settling down and having a family. We have a mutual friend that they have two kids now, and you know, they at first they talked about wanting to have five, but you know, maybe they won't have five. But it's just different strokes for different folks, and being middle class may not be the same as what middle class was before. I look into my investments and, you know, what can I afford on a good budget, and what can I put away? What can I have in a travel fund? Because that's more important to me. The world is a lot smaller now with my SkyMiles account. We just flew for free. You know?
Exactly. And I think it's interesting when you talk about the military, because definitely I think it's underestimate when you talk to people about thank you for your service and oh my gosh, you're making great sacrifices. And of course there are sacrifices there. But the military provides, if you do it right, provides a pretty healthy existence.
I mean, look at the trips that we all took together, the New Zealand it's unfair at times.
Other than being beholden to an entity that requires permission and all this good stuff and 24
lots
hours
of paperwork
on call, you know, it is a good life, and it's definitely non-traditional, I guess. It's mm-hmm. unconventional, but it's still a way of life, and it's almost an out, if you will, that you can see people take. And so that's different.
And not to bring it full circle like you like to do for John sometimes, but a lot of people in the Midwest join the military. You know, you haven't mentioned it, but I don't even know if I should bring it up, my current job in the Army. But I just notice a lot of people in the Midwest join the Army.
Yeah.
Not everybody, but I can't tell you how many people I've met. And it's not just Midwest, but Rust Belt. I mean, we talked a little bit before about how the Rust Belt is not just one area. It's not just three cities. It's not Detroit, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh. It's Toledo. And I would even argue, you know, some of the Minnesotas and Wisconsins of the world. I mean, we know a couple people mutually that yeah. joined from Wisconsin. And those were the same kind of cities, just a heck of a lot colder.
Yeah.
That they, you know, that's a pretty high military background area too. So it is this area of the country. And some may argue there's nothing better to do at certain points. And you know, there was that video that got released earlier last week. I think it was a teacher in California talking about how the military is like a last resort and a bunch of idiots. And, you know, it was pretty, I mean, it was pretty vile. He was saying some pretty ridiculous things. And I know somebody posted a video about the newscaster telling him that he was an idiot. I think it was dumb shit was the word that he used, that only dumb shits join the Army or join the military. And the announcer said, yeah, well, only a dumb shit would say that as a teacher. You know, so it was one of those things. But, you know, to get all the way back, I think that, you know, the military is a good option for folks in the Midwest because some of the economy has left.
Yeah.
It's coming back, but some of it is left and some of the larger chunks of it have left. So what do you do? I'm not going to sit here and do nothing. I got to find something that works for me, and healthcare works.
Yeah.
Because it's transportable, and so is the military.
With an economy that really is directly linked to – or the overall economy that's directly linked to something like the automotive industry or, we'll just say steel, for example, mm-hmm. it becomes I don't know. It's almost as if these areas haven't really found something else. And so you can easily go to a San Francisco or a Boston or these other cities that have really ridden the wave of technologies. And, you know, the Obama administration, we won't go into a whole lot of political stuff here, but
good as John debating that.
Well, and for your own job security as of right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
You know, there was this idea that, you know, the middle class, like we, as much as we want to go back to manufacturing, it'd be great, but that's just not the reality of today with globalization. We really need to put our eggs in the technologies basket and progressive things like AI, robotics, the internet, stuff like that. And you lose this chunk of the population that has a tougher time adapting to that. And so when you say the military, I mean, in my case, just being stranded with the idea of $40,000 in debt for school, to me, it was a no-brainer. Like,
yeah.
You know, I don't know that it was this huge sense of patriotic duty to join. I mean, it definitely was. I had examples in my family where it was something that I would like to do, but it was never anything that I grew up thinking I was going to do.
Right.
And maybe that's the case for you as well. It was more opportunity. That was
yeah, bad. And you have to seize that, and that's, I mean, look at it. That's part of what this area of the country did at that time. Mm-hmm. You have cities built by these ports. I mean, it started in Ohio. It started back with the Erie Canal and moving goods from different areas up to the Great Lakes, and then the shipping channels up from Superior all the way down through. There's a reason why these cities are where they're at.
Yeah, it's not a mistake.
Yeah. Did you say it is a mistake?
It is not a mistake. No.
Oh, yeah. Because they call Cleveland a mistake on the lake. So, you know, I figured it's not that far from the truth. Well, but, you know, and then, I mean, go to Pittsburgh now. Pittsburgh is steel town. And as much as it drives me nuts being around, and I don't know if there's any Yinzers listening, but they'll know who they are when I say that word. It's the steel town, but there's really no steel going on here anymore. It's not like I'm seeing, you know, foundries left and right and smoke billowing out. They've realized in a good way, they realize that you got to keep moving forward. There's a lot of banks here. There's other industries here. There's a lot of food and breweries and this and that. I mean, it's the stuff of the times. You know, we don't need to always keep doing the same thing. I mean, granted, you don't want to completely abandon your background and your basis if it's a good area for it, but you know, and I don't support I don't know enough but it seems like a bad idea of all the fracking, but that's turned into a huge industry here. I'm not saying I'm for or against it, it just doesn't seem like a smart idea. But it produces a resource that people want and need and will pay for. And I mean, you can't hate people for figuring that out. Now, if it's detrimental to the planet after the fact, like, hey, let's probably back off of that. But it's turning into an industry.
Yeah. Well, you watch these towns, and especially Detroit, you have to reinvent. And what's interesting about the reinvention is it isn't, like I said, it isn't the investments all in one basket. It's not all the eggs in one basket. And so you look at, the infrastructure building around breweries or restaurants or logistics or technologies. And I think someone maybe my dad's age could look and say, well, where is the sustainability in this? And when you've been living in one town that's been driven by one industry for almost, a century, if not more, the idea of having all these different industries seems unsustainable or flimsy or frail or fragile.
Yeah.
But the reality is something needs to happen. And you look at a Detroit and maybe even a Pittsburgh, where something needs to happen in order to build up this middle class or have some sort of industry for this middle class, because there's no way you don't move forward and you don't move up and you don't sustain without some sort of forward progression. And where do those people go? It's towards poverty. It's a gravitational pull. I mean, you're not going up, you're going to go down.
Yeah. And Pittsburgh's, you talked about Detroit. I mean, Pittsburgh's an interesting town that you could do a whole deep dive into with the different kinds of people. And I mean, you leave 5 minutes outside of downtown. Downtown is such, you've been and visited. I mean, the downtown is so concentrated in one area. It's the point between the three rivers. And if you look at a picture, you just pull up a picture of Pittsburgh on Google Images or Bing Images, as you guys do. Bing it. But you can see how concentrated downtown is. And then the sprawl is different. The sprawl is sprawling within hills. So there's only so many places you can go. And you could see that certain people just didn't want to move to certain areas. And I mean that going both ways. I'm not saying only poor people live here and only rich people live there. But there's an intermingling of the different cultures, different backgrounds, the young professionals with the old timers that are still living there. I mean, one of our favorite concert halls is in a neighborhood, and I jokingly, every time we go, I say it smells like mothballs because the houses just look like, I mean, picture your great grandmother's house, and that's what it looks like. And it's right next to a concert hall that lets out at 2 a.m. It's weird. You also saw that with the election. I mean, when the election happened, majority of the metropolitan areas in our area that we're talking about, the Rust Belt, majority of the metropolitan areas voted Democrat and do pretty consistently. And then the rural areas in between they vote Republican. And you saw that. And I woke up, I was surprised by the election, to be honest, but I was more curious about what did Pennsylvania do, because that was the area I was living in, and specifically Pittsburgh. And it did vote Democrat, but you couldn't tell from the area. And when you go to the grocery store and things like that, because there's so many people that are living in different areas that you don't realize. I mean, you went to the grocery store and you thought it was Trump country.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to see that. And people are a little bit less talkative about politics in this area because there's really a couple different sides of the story here. And it's kind of a good place to be in terms of politics.
Because
I don't have to talk about it all the time. I do like it, but I also understand that it's not for everybody to chat about.
Well, it's interesting to see the cohabitation with so many different types of people. And, I saw that in Baltimore when we lived in D.C.
Right.
But Detroit is different in the sense that it's just so vast and so many people left. And for a massive city of only about 700,000 people, I mean, you're lucky if you get people out to vote in the first place, but you don't have that. Maybe in the city center, there's a mix. But even then, no one can afford to live in that area where all the stadiums are. It's dinks, double income, no kids, or businessmen and families. But it's interesting. When I came to Pittsburgh, I don't know what I thought. I have no idea. I really had no expectations. But when I got there, it was very different from what I thought it would be. Yeah. And especially the rolling hills and stuff. It's a beautiful
city. Yeah, you kind of like can't put a finger on exactly what Pittsburgh is. If you drive more than 20 minutes in and around the city, it changes so much.
Yeah.
And you might lose your transmission going up one of the hills too. But it's very interesting. And you were talking about politicians and all this kind of stuff in these different areas. The one that I always remember in Cleveland is Dennis Kucinich. Like the guy, he had been around forever doing different things, and pretty interesting past, but I'll never forget. I mean, we were in Lakewood, which was, like I said, right next door to Cleveland. And this is how long ago I was rollerblading, and my mom was walking along next to me on one of the side streets. And there's Dennis Kucinich with one of his, political party supporters or whatever. And they were walking around going door to door to say hello to people. And I think at that point, I don't know if he was running for a senator, Congress seat, but he was getting votes. He was getting, there going door to door. And this was probably early 90s. And, it sticks with me. And my uncle Mark always jokes about Kucinich for president and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, he's just this scrawny little dude if you look him up, but he was a great leader in the sense that he would go around and do that kind of stuff. Yeah. Even though it may not have been the smartest idea, he got out to the people. Yeah. And he was elected for a while. I mean, he did a good job. So
I think
it's interesting.
Yeah. I think there's a different sense of community in maybe those two cities of Cleveland and Pittsburgh that you didn't see in Detroit, because so much of the area was suburbs in Detroit.
Yeah.
By then time, urban sprawl had happened post 67 riots and everyone was leaving. But one thing that I found in Pittsburgh, and maybe this is maybe not the best description, but I felt like Pittsburgh was a time capsule when I showed up. It was and not a bad time capsule, because that's fine, but it was just within the city itself. And it's because it becomes difficult to build in a place like Pittsburgh where everything's hills. Mm-hmm. And but it really, other than the people adapting to life and technology and iPhones and nicer cars, you could almost shoot a movie based in the 80s, 70s and 80s on any street in Pittsburgh and not have to change the decorations.
Yeah, they do. There's a studio down like two blocks down from our old house, 31st Street Studios. It's like right by this bridge. And there's plenty of movies that are filmed here. I mean, the movie Concussion, which I know that wasn't set like a long time ago, but that was set during, I think it was supposed to be set during the 80s or 90s or whatever. But they just filmed it a couple years ago here. And you can see one of the street corners they're sitting at. They didn't change a single sign, like the businesses, everything. I mean, and some of the businesses are newer, but there's just not like, it's not that kind of a flashy city.
Yeah.
And it never has been and never will be. But they do some things and they update. They're doing it right. I will give Pittsburgh that compared to what Cleveland was doing for a while, and Cleveland's getting there. We're coming back kind of thing. There's the flats are back officially. I mean, there's stuff going on in the flats, which if you know of the whole burning of the Cuyahoga River, it was not a, arsonist. It was the fact that this river could catch on fire. It was the absurd thing. That was the flats at one point. And, the flats were where to be, apparently. And for the longest time, all I knew about the flats growing up was there was one place called Shooters and you could drive your boat. That was it. There was one place. And for some reason, it has still survived. But now there's other things finally there. And eventually they'll completely get there. But, it starts with casinos and it starts with sports teams. And then the breweries and the little hipster joints show up.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You build your own economy around it. It doesn't have to be Tesla coming into town or Google coming into town or whatever. But, every once in a while, that stuff will come back because it's a good area. I mean, Pittsburgh has Uber has their self-driving cars based here because the roads are so terrible. They want to test them out here. Google has an office here. I believe Facebook has some kind of office here. It eventually did bring that business. And if you would have asked somebody 30 years ago if these kind of places were ever going to be here, they'd say absolutely not.
Well, and that's just the point is Amazon's vying for another headquarters in somewhere. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to come to a city to build the city up. They're going to come to a place where people are willing to move to because the existing infrastructure, the existing area is palatable. It's a nice place to have a family. So you need to build a economy and build a place where people want to be in the first place to incentivize these companies to come. So, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's not, you can't wait around for the lottery ticket. You have to, you have to incentivize individuals who would otherwise leave. I mean, in my case, I was never going to stay in Detroit. There was no reason to. I mean, where I grew up.
Family,
absolutely. And I'm not,
don't forget about them.
Yeah. I'm certainly not knocking people that do stay. That's not the point. Because I could have easily had a wonderful life there. And granted, my situation was a little different. My family lives everywhere. Literally. Yeah. But you do need to incentivize. Why stay here? Why set down your roots here? And look, you can build a business. You can do whatever you want. And the American dream, right? It's coming back to reinventing the American dream for the middle class. That, look, it's not the line, but hey, you can build and do whatever you want. And that's
Look at something, not to completely change topics. Look at Jenny and I, we watch HGTV pretty much is like the only other TV that's on. If we're not watching a movie or something, you know, else, or like something recorded or whatever, we're watching HGTV. And all of these shows are about fixing things up, taking the old stuff, making it newer. 10, 15 years ago, nobody wanted to live in an old house. Everybody wanted a brand new house and all that. And there's nothing wrong with either option. You can just see a paradigm shift going on. And we downsized. We lived in a row house in downtown, and it cost a little bit more. I mean, it was within our budget, but we were like, why are we doing this? And we came a little bit further out into one of the southern boroughs of the city, and we definitely downsized in terms of room, but that's all we needed. I mean, we have a two-seater couch from IKEA, and which there's an IKEA in Pittsburgh. That's the only reason why I have it. But that's another thing. There's another big business that comes in that brings people in. I mean, you go to that parking lot and there's license plates from the five neighboring states. Yeah. But you know, our idea of a dream has changed a little bit, that we're not looking for a 2000 square foot or 3000 square foot house, in a cul-de-sac. We're looking for something with some character and something that we could maybe fix up a little bit or whatever. But, you know, it's, I think part of that is that American dream, depending on what part of the country you're in. I mean, the LA American dream is getting on a sitcom and getting syndication. I would never want to do that.
No. Or just making enough money to be able to live wherever you're at.
You can afford more than a shoebox. I mean, I flew with a lady the other day that she was sitting next to me, and she has a house in Seattle or an apartment in Seattle that she rents or that she owns, excuse me. She has a house that was a triplex that she rents out to three different people. So she's got some income there. And then she has an apartment in New York, in Manhattan, that she does not rent out.
Jesus.
So if you can have an apartment in Manhattan that you do not rent out, like, you're doing well. And she's a consultant for HR. But, you know, that was her dream. That was the way she thought of it. And, you know, she has to make enough money to support all three of those places. I would love that, in a sense of the idea of being able to jet set across the country and have a place. But I would be so incredibly nervous that if somebody's not renting out one of those places, I'm out like millions of dollars.
I mean, circumstance led to this probably more than not, but you know, having a house in Hawaii with a $3,000 mortgage and then moving, you know, to Denver, it's palatable because of Hawaii, in the prices of Hawaii, but there's no way. I mean, I would literally be broke 2 months unrented for whatever reason. I mean, and even housing is a whole nother conversation with just affordability in the middle class and being stagnation of wages and stuff like that. I mean, that's why the military is so, it's almost like a godsend in a way, if you do it right, to be able to just live and not have to worry. I mean, unless you're, you know, just being stupid for the most part, but you know,
some people do that too. Yes, that is part of our economic problems in this country.
Yes, but you know, when you are trying to create a life for yourself, and you have the last 15 years, wages have sort of just stagnated; they haven't increased. I mean, when you think about the American dream, where you're talking about even just buying a home, I mean, especially with people loaded down with $50,000 worth of school debt. I mean, it's just, I don't know. Again, it comes back to redefining what the middle class is and what expectations you have for yourself.
Yeah.
The 3,000 square foot house would be great. But I think also with the fact that we're not having kids as early in life as our ancestors, that's not what my parents want to be called, but, you know, it's
how old are your parents?
You know, there, it's just not there. And there isn't a huge rush for a multitude of reasons. One being the debt, one being, and globalization, just being able to go do what you want to do. If you have the means to do that. And, you know, I'm like putting down on this house and doing a loan application, and compared to statistically the amount of debt that Americans carry versus what, I mean, not that it's not braggadocious, but the military has been amazing for that specific thing. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't imagine, I wouldn't be doing it. I mean, I would not be buying a house with even $30,000 worth of school debt. And you just, I don't know. It's like you're restarting your life just later, or your dream to do something just is like pushed off a decade because.
Yeah. And it's okay to do that. But some people don't think it is. And, you know, they rush a little bit too fast to get to that point. And it works out for some, but you also see it fail miserably for others. And there's also life events that happen, sure. Divorce or sickness or, you know, just dumb bad luck. But for the most part, I mean, if you set yourself up right, even if some of those things hit you, you can bounce back pretty well. But, you know, you're doing it.
it's been an interesting transition.
You are doing it. And I know, like, we have history, we can talk, you know, about different things, but, you know, doing what you're doing now, you and John, this stuff, you know, we started doing furniture. You and I started doing furniture together a long time ago. I mean, you're doing some of that kind of stuff on the side, and
as you are.
Yeah, of course. And it's something that you do. You start figuring out how are you going to keep moving forward. And I mean, I made sure my first thing was paying off my debt. I, even with the military, I still had student loan debt, and I paid it off on my own. I mean, deployment helped. I was able to bank a lot of money while I was on deployment, because at that point I had no wife, no kids or anything. Mm-hmm. So I put a lot of it. I mean, I was the lady when I did my taxes was like, how much did you pay off on your loans this year? So I was debt free by the age of 28 or 29, yeah. Something like that. You know, I was starting with $65,000 in student loan debt. Jesus. And that was even with the military. So, you know, in about 6-8 years, I paid all that off and then go ahead and do the dumb American thing and buy a big Ford F-150.
It's a nice truck.
My grandpa retired from Ford, so I had to. That's my excuse.
Yeah, there you go.
But, you know, so right there, I'm right back into debt. But, you know, I could argue that's decent debt because I'm not upside down on it. But looking back on it, is that really the smartest idea? Probably not. And I feel like I'm, you know, I'm not the smartest cookie in the shed, whatever you want to call it. But I like to think I make smart decisions with my money, but that was a dumb one. And I'll be honest, it just is. To buy a brand new car is not an appreciating asset.
Well, I got rid of the Jeep. And
you did?
I did, yes. I made the financial decision.
You buy a Prius?
I bought a 2003 Chevy Silverado 1500.
Oh, look
and
at you.
So here's the difference. You're kind of kicking yourself for buying a new vehicle. And where I say, I paid it off, I'm getting paid by the dealership, and then next week, I am sure, undoubtedly, I'm going to go outside and it's going to be click, click.
See, but yeah, I mean, you heard of Dave Ramsey?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure some listeners have too, but he talks about that. And I was just had a conversation with somebody else about it. It's okay. Like, if you have it paid off, even if you have to take the thing to the shop 3 times in the year, and each one of those times is $1,000, it's probably still going to be less than if you were paying on a brand new car that you're stuck with.
With the interest and everything.
Yeah, and all that. I mean, it's just, it is. And I mean, we're going to Germany next, and we're going to actually sell my truck. I'm like I said, I'm right side up on it, and we're going to get rid of it. And at first I was, if Jenny listens to this, she'll laugh, because we had almost an argument about getting rid of my truck. It's like, why do I have to get rid of my truck? Why can't you get rid of your car? And, but at the end of the day, it's a smart money move, and she's much better with money than I am. But it makes sense to get rid of it. And I'm going to buy, you know, a European car for 10 grand at most. You know, we kind of are setting aside that number, and whatever fits, and then boom, it's done. And if it breaks, yeah, something's going to break on it, but we'll have the leftover income to take care of that.
Well, not to mention petrol prices, if you will.
Oh, petrol.
Petrol are pretty astronomical there.
I haven't learned gasoline yet in German. I've been doing Duolingo, so.
Well, I'll give you a heads up. I know what exit means in German, and it's Ausfahrt. And when I was in Germany driving around, all the exits had this sign saying Ausfahrt, and I bought a cup, and that's how the Germans say it too. So for our German listeners out there, Ausfahrt, and I actually bought a cup that said, I finally found Ausfahrt. Because this town is everywhere. I've been
waking up and just like using German words and pissing her off. Like, I just find my favorites for the day. Duolingo is fantastic. I'll throw a free plug in for them. It's really good.
I'm doing it for Spanish right now. I've got the clinic I'm working in is a very heavy Hispanic population. So Duolingo, I know it's like set up for kids or whatever, but it's awesome. It's,
you know, we're gonna have to edit all of this out because we're just BSing now.
No, it's I've decided about 20 minutes ago that this is going to be a standalone podcast. So
I'm already high class.
You're already top shelf.
Well, little do the listeners know, I've been wanting to get on this for a while. I've been listening since day one, so when John hears this, you know, he knows that I do respect what you guys are doing here. And it wasn't just last week, I was catching up because of all the travels. And I think it was the State of the Union when he gave his little – John gave his soapbox on immigration and the plan moving forward. I thought it was fantastic, and it was very well said. It was almost like he had it written down. You know, it was like a West Wing style speech that he gave. It was very like nonpartisan, very middle of the road, just like smart move. And it was funny because it got something similar was brought up. I was listening to the radio this morning and talking about, bringing something to the table, bringing that the House plan, bringing it to the Senate. And then I heard somebody say at work today that got shot down. I was like, well, here we go again.
Yeah. Well, we actually wound up splicing that, and it's something we'd like to push out to.
Yeah, it was good, and not to go completely off topic, but I really do think you guys have a good thing going here, and hopefully, you know, even if I do have a standalone episode, maybe I can get on with all three of us or something at some point.
It's the plan moving forward, and you know, we are up to about 50 minutes here, so I will say, you know, for those of you who, and I'm specifically addressing you in this, thanks for being around since we're in our 90s already, like literally over only 6 months.
That's nuts.
So it's been a grind, but you know,
and I have been listening. I have been,
I know, because you'll send me texts that like, hey, catching up. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I couldn't imagine how many you have to catch up on. Cause there's like three per week, but
I do it on the train every day and then, you know, I find my time at work. I'm allowed to put on some headphones every once in a while when I want to ignore my coworkers.
We definitely appreciate that, and I guess we'll definitely look forward to having you back. You have an open seat here at Mod State, and then eventually, hopefully, years down the road, when you're no longer beholden to Uncle Sam, we can have some real political candid conversations.
Yeah, I can actually talk about things outside of what's put out in the media blurbs by the military. Like, this is what you're allowed to say.
But what we can do is have dance around conversations about some philosophical topics and some ideology. So, but I guess with closing, for those of you who are listening, this is a longtime listener, Zach Calamonte, and one of my best friends. And we certainly thank you for tuning into Mod State. Wherever you get your podcasts, please continue to do so on iTunes and Podomatic. And please log into modstate.com, find all of our op-ed and opinion pieces, links to all of our social media accounts and our op-ed, like I said, op-ed and opinion pieces. So with that, my friend, we really appreciate you coming on, and we'll have you back soon.
Yeah. So. Tschüss, which I think means bye in German.
Auf Fahrt. All right. We'll see ya. Bye. For you, this is a game, but for me, this is work. I punch in high when I step on the stage and get paid when my record is played. Work.